irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And you can all do me a huge favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media groups or to someone that you know that can benefit from a particular show. I just got a text message that came in about a week ago from someone that said, you know, Alan, I just really want to thank you for bringing on the person that we had just had that was talking about some of the things that are affecting our brain. And that guest was Max Lugavere. And they said that they were dealing with some issues in regards to their mom, and they had gone to all of these specialists that were trying to help them, and they said they really just started changing her diet and said that they're already seeing changes, and it's only been about 2 weeks. So if you know somebody out there, if you go to the site, look at some of the shows that we have. I think we all probably know somebody that could gain some benefit from one of the great people that we're having on the show. So for everybody out there, just remember that Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues. It could be locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, one of my favorite topics, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we will constantly introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and sometimes fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today is going to have to do with transition and young people and the way in which they are transitioning. But before I get to our guest, I want to talk a little bit about some of the statistics, but I also want to tell everybody about a person that I just met. I recently met a real champion. He's a champion of a man, and he teaches self-confidence. He teaches hard work. And he teaches respect, and I was able to observe him doing that. His name is Kleber Luciano. He's a fifth-degree black belt, six-time Brazilian champion. He's the 2005 Black Belt Challenge champion, the 2006 World Jiu-Jitsu champion. In the Pan American Games, he was a champion six times. In the World Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Championships, he was a champion seven times. He was the U.S. Open champion three times. So I just want people to know that I was watching him work with children. And for those of you listening that want your children to improve their self-confidence, this is one of the things that you can do. So I really want to suggest that you consider martial arts training. It's something that I had put my boys through and I'd sort of forgotten now that mine are grown. So anyway, if you're in Orange County, California, I suggest that you contact Kleber, and you can reach him at 714-842-4554. And if your child is already involved in martial arts, go ahead and check out their website at kleberjujitsu.com. That's JUIJITSU.com. In fact, they have an upcoming tournament, and they're going to focus on helping registrants build self-esteem and camaraderie. So again, as many of you know, that, you know, I've worked a lot with adolescents and with young adults. In fact, it's now been for over 30 years. And unfortunately, an overwhelming number of young adults now are experiencing anxiety and depression. And if that is left untreated, they're at increased risk for loneliness, academic struggles, substance abuse, anxiety, depression, and other mental health or developmental challenges. In fact, in the last 20 years, we have a treatment option that is described as young adult transition programs, and they've emerged to support young adults as they launch into healthy, independent lifestyles. So the topic today, we are calling it what young adults identify as key factors that support and change. It supports growth, but it elicits a change in their transition. So discuss this and more. Our guest today is Mona Treadway. She is the co-owner of Dragonfly Transitions and has her doctorate in leadership and change through Antioch University, where her research focused specifically on young adults in treatment. She is also a graduate of Portland State University with a master's in social work and a graduate of Prescott College with a bachelor's degree in human development and wilderness leadership. Mona has worked with a variety of populations, including women survivors of breast cancer and Native Alaskan teenagers who've been dealing with substance abuse issues. She has led therapeutic wilderness trips, taught college-level outdoor courses, and wilderness skills such as rock climbing, skiing, kayaking, glacier travel, and backpacking. Her graduate internships included work at hospice, a drug and alcohol outpatient program, and as a college counselor at the Oregon Institute of Technology. Now, while she was at OIT, she received training in cognitive behavioral therapy and suicide assessment and prevention. Mona teaches young adults how to let go and accept their situation as they can begin building meaningful lives. She has a clear understanding of family dynamics and an ability to help families move from crisis into stability. She particularly loves program development and creates an environment where staff and students alike engage in the process of growth and change. Mona, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Alan, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. I think that many people out there now realize that there have been some changes that have been going on in the way in which adolescents are transitioning or not into adulthood. So, for some of the people that don't know, there are things that I know. So, Mona, I know that you've owned and operated, a young adult transition program for over 17 years. What led you down that path? Because it seems like you started down a path kind of right at the time in which we needed it.
Yeah, so my husband and I had started our organization as Dragonfly Adventures, which was much more of a customized wilderness program for families and for individuals. And our first year in, we were working with a young man, 21 years old, and, his family wrote him a letter partway through the trip and said, look, we really love you, but it's not okay to come back home and live in our house. We need you to figure out the next step of your life. And at that time, there was not a lot of resources within community settings. And this young man, being 21, he really needed to be in a town, learning to work and pay his bills and really the independent life skills. So Dragonfly Transition really emerged out of that one young man who we just supported in finding a house and a therapist and job skills training. And ever since then, we've really organically grown to where we now have three different sites in Southern Oregon and just find this age group fascinating and fun to work with.
Now,
and there's a great need.
Yes, exactly. Now, about how many young people are you working with right now?
We typically run about 50 students.
Wow.
At a time. Yeah.
Now, and I was recently at a NATSAP function, and one of the things that I was really enjoying was a lot of the research that was put together. They were providing a lot of information that I think is so valuable to all of us, be it people that work in the industry or parents, to know that they're not alone. So I know that you recently finished a comprehensive research study and that the findings are now published in the Journal of Therapeutic Schools and Programs. Why did you focus on the term what young adults identify as key factors that support growth and change?
Yeah, so a driving factor for me to go back and get my doctorate was the fact that there, 5 years ago, there was really very little research on this model, young adults in transition. And we were finding that it was a growth area. There was more and more programs that were opening, but there wasn't the research to really back what we were all doing and the services we were providing. So in my mind, it was really important to go back and have a foundational study where we really heard from the young adults that had been through these programs around what they in particular identified as helping them or hindering their process of launching, you know, from their parents' house into whether it's an academic world or self-sufficiency and working. So it was important to hear their voices.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. And I'm very interested in what some of your findings were. So what were some of the highlights of your findings from interviewing all of these young adults?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I was surprised and in other ways not. And it was reinforcing of the structure of a lot of these programs. You know, while I think evidence-based treatment is really important, what they, these young adults, were really talking about was the environment of these programs that they step into. And I think this would translate to college campuses as well. But where they really talked about the important factors were the interpersonal relationships with people, where they were being, where they felt really cared for and supported and accepted for who they were, but also challenged to dig deeper. They talked a lot about the community and culture of a program. So again, that feeling of being seen, of being heard, of feeling accepted for who they are. So again, it's very much about the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And then another piece was really the experiential education and adventure that at this stage, and probably for a lot of us in our learning styles, but particularly these young adults ages, you know, 18 to 26, that they need to really not just be sitting in a group therapy room or in a therapist office, but they need to be in the community doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So experiential learning, hands-on learning, as well as being challenged to step out of their comfort zone through, you know, adventure, recreational activities. We do some international travel. But these were things, as we interviewed these students for this research, that they really identified as sort of sticking with them and being helpful over the years.
Now, what were some of the common denominators? So again, for some of our listeners out there, you know, some of the parents that are maybe listening to this and going, wow, that sounds like my son or daughter, you know, that's currently living in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what were some of the common denominators when you were talking to these people that maybe parents could hear and see that may tell them that they might be, their young people or their kids may actually be a candidate for something like this?
Yeah, I mean, the common thread that we really hear a lot of is anxiety, depression, you know, in some ways just being paralyzed by how much information they have access to in the world these days, that it just feels scary to even take one step to make a choice of what college class to take, or anxiety around even walking through the door and asking somebody, you know, for a job application. I could read a quote, if that would be helpful, from one of the interviews.
I think that would be great. That would be great.
Would that be great?
Yes.
Excellent. So this young adult said, prior to treatment, they stated they were struggling with bulimia and severe depression, severe anxiety, all the DSM. Following treatment, they stated, I'm working on my associates for human services, and then I'm going to get my MSW, and then I want to become a DBT therapist. I'm struggling a lot right now. I'm kind of in my depression, and it sucks, and I hate it. At the same time, prior to treatment, I wouldn't fight, and I'm fighting right now. I have good resources. I have good friends. I have good support, and I'm sure that we'll talk about this later, but the program really helped me with that. So stories from young adults prior to treatment and being in the community with others that were experiencing this stuff, they were dealing with anxiety, depression, isolation, and in contrast, following the experience, they were able to describe, you know, feeling connection, support, perseverance, and having some insight on what was getting in their way.
And one of the things that I love most about that quote is the fact that they didn't say, wow, we waved a magic wand and all of a sudden life is beautiful. No, I love the fact that it went directly to the point of, you know what, I still have struggles. I'm still the same person. I still feel depressed sometimes. but I know how to deal with it now. I have people around me. I'm willing to talk about it. I'm not sinking deeper and deeper into this and then cutting everybody off. That, I think, is what's real.
Absolutely. And to me, that's the definition of a success, that don't we all have struggles throughout our life?
Sure.
But where does the grit and resilience come to manage those struggles when they come up?
Yeah, well, we have a listener question, and this one comes in that reads, my friend's 25-year-old nephew has extreme OCD and ADD. His mother committed suicide when he was 10 years old, and his father passed 2 years ago of cancer. One night, this young man showed up at my friend's door and asked to stay for a few days. A year later, he is unable to communicate. He is smoking a great deal of pot, hardly comes out of the bedroom, and is living off of a small inheritance check he receives each month. My friend, a sweet, mild-mannered English professor, feels a sense of obligation to his nephew, but is desperate to get some direction on what to do. Can you pass along some words of wisdom?
Yeah, he's managing a lot. And so for us, these transition models, typically students are coming to us having had a primary, you know, more intensive treatment experience. So residential treatment or therapeutic wilderness programs are a great resource where they can have an experience where they're not having to manage the stressors of the everyday life, where they really get to go inward and look at what they have been impacted by. And that young man, it sounds like he struggled with a lot. So to be in a safe environment where he's clean and sober, eating healthy food, getting exercise, getting a good sleep pattern, and really being connected with professionals and also a peer group that has maybe experienced some similar struggles in life could be really valuable. To sort of get them out of that rut and moving.
You know, as most people know, I'm someone that works a lot more with adolescents, which can sometimes be translated into we have leverage or the parents still have leverage. What would you tell this particular person? Because if he's referring to someone that's 25 years old and both parents have passed, my guess is they don't have leverage. They really need to be able to focus on how they can get him to start making some better decisions for himself. But I think that first step has got to be the toughest.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the first step is the toughest. And I tend to think that, you know, most young adults are pretty insightful and wise, but they're stuck and they need somebody to sort of push them out of the nest. And so sometimes that is holding a tough boundary of saying, look, we love you, but we're not going to continue to support you in this pattern. Mm-hmm. So you either need to get out and get a job and start making some different choices, or we'll support this treatment option. So I think it takes a skillful therapist or educational consultant, but somebody outside of the family system to help families navigate this transition.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, because I know that in speaking with many parents, you know, they have the fear of if it all comes from them, that there's this concern about, you know, their child feeling rejected, you know, that they feel rejected,
right,
or they feel abandoned, and that's a huge amount of guilt, you know, for the parents to have to deal with. So I love the fact that what we're talking about is that bring a professional in, a professional that can come in and share the information in a way of saying, you know, the reason I'm here is because of how much your parents do love you. Or in a case like this, you know, if it's apparently it's an uncle, you know, where this person has moved in, you know, but it's still, you know, the relative that is now involved. You know, the therapist is able to focus on that. You know, it's because they love you that we're here. I couldn't agree more that, you know, to be able to get some professional help. But at the same time, you know, they're going to have to give some level of an ultimatum so that they don't just stay closed up and in this case, sort of, you know, living in the basement or wherever and not coming out, not communicating with other people.
Right.
Sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And it's a hard step. And I would say most of the young adults that we work with are really appreciative down the road once that boundary's been held, because they are in the world and they're living life differently and they feel so much better.
You know, and I think
that first step is hard.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And if you could share a couple of the success stories to where, you know, envision that you have a parent out there that is having trouble making that decision. And just so share some of the success stories to where, you know, however much time, however many months, years, or whatever afterwards, when that young person is now telling you or telling their parents how much they appreciate that very difficult decision that they made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have lots of those stories. And we'll often tell parents as they're coming into this process of, you know, a young adult transition program or treatment program that this is really messy. Like, they are not, our students at Dragonfly are not so cocooned that they can't make poor choices. You know, we want them in the world engaging in their lifestyle, which means they may fail another college class or they might have a relapse. But what we really know is that if the whole family system engages in the process, what Chrissy Positek would say, the parallel process, mm-hmm. It's a great book to read and really supportive. But if the whole family system engages in the process and is willing to step outside their comfort zone and do things differently, the prognosis for that young adult is so much higher. You know, so we hear students, you know, we have right now have graduates of our program that are field guides in therapeutic wilderness programs, or, you know, one, he finished his master's and he's an urban planner in the Southeast, or they're doing their master's in social work. So we really hear a lot of stories of success.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes hand in hand with, you know, that quote from that alumni of, it doesn't mean it was all smooth sailing.
Right.
They'll describe bumps and ups and downs and times where everybody got, thanks, gosh, you know, why did we invest all these resources in this? Because we've planted seeds and they've continued to learn and grow. And there's a lot of hope.
Well, and many of the people out there know that one of my companies does the crisis intervention and adolescent transport. And I know that when we are transporting, oftentimes we will have a young person that will say to us, well, you don't understand. You shouldn't be taking me. I come from a dysfunctional family. and our response to that is that, you know, that may very well be the case. And if that is the case, you know, think of how much benefit you can gain from being in a situation, you know, with dealing with very loving people out here that will work with you in how to take that information back to your family. But share with the audience a little bit about the things that some of these young people share with you that allows you to look at it as something that you can bring the parents into. So, you know, how valuable do they see it when they know that you have the parents or other family members also working on some of their issues?
I think it's really valuable just for the young person to know that, you know, they're not an identified problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, that this is about the whole system and everybody's doing their work. And sometimes we have a family system where people aren't willing to do the work, and then it's helping the young adult understand, okay, you know, your developmental life task right now is about separation, individuation from your family system. You know, our goal is that you learn to stand, you know, who are you at your core outside of your family system? What are your values? What's important? But also, how do you stay connected to your family and healthy, but it's a changing relationship. So I really view our role as helping everybody shift the parent-child relationship, you know, still parent-child, but how does it become more of an adult relationship, where parents step back and give their young adult space to make choices for themselves, even though they may not totally agree with it, but that the young adult gets to have ownership and responsibility and consequences for their choices, that we're not protecting them so much that they don't have to manage the consequences of what they've decided to choose.
Yeah, and it sounds like part of what you're saying as well is that they will take more responsibility, and it may make your job a little bit easier when you can share with them, or they can recognize the fact that the parents are also taking ownership in their contribution to all of this.
Right, absolutely. That they stop stepping in all the time to problem solve, or they stop sort of giving an out. You know, we'll often talk in the beginning stages of treatment, you know, if a student feels like there's a crack or the door is open to go home or change programs, they're never going to just land and settle into the current program that they're in. So really, families really putting ownership on the young adult of this is what we support, you know, and in the process, really supporting the parents in their own work and answering any questions that may, you know, they may have about a program. In the early years of our program, we thought, well, we're working with young adults. We don't have to provide a lot of services to parents because this is about separation, individuation. But what we've really learned is for parents to have confidence and, you know, trust the process and the program, we needed to give them more support. You know, so we do a lot of parent coaching and therapy and family workshops in order so that they can step back and know that there's other people that are paying attention to their children and have their best interest at heart.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because, you know, by helping the parents, you don't have a situation to where, you know, the young person goes back home and through guilt or whatever, the parents invites them back into the, you know, into the downstairs bedroom and gets them a 72-inch TV and says, you know, have fun. So,
And I also think about, you know, there's a lot of families, parents that will say they struggle in setting the boundary, maybe because their child deals with suicidal ideation, you know, or threatens to commit suicide. And so that, to me, my heart just goes out because that's an ultimate painful choice for a parent to make of, do I set this boundary or do we stay in the status quo because I might be risking my child's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard one to grapple with.
Boy, you got that right. So for everybody out there, we are talking with Dr. Mona Treadway. Our topic today is, what are young adults, what are they identifying as key factors that support growth and change in transition? We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking about young adults' transition. And we have another listener question. This one reads, I have been a high school counselor for 11 years, and I can't express how the continual rise in the number of seniors I see walk out our doors each year, totally unrealistic about what it means to become an adult and support oneself. Most worrisome is the word depression. That is at epidemic proportions with our young people. And rather than being pushed towards a healthy lifestyle, they're being prescribed antidepressant drugs, which are making the situation even worse. I visited your site and loved your message. Can you speak to this issue? Mona?
This is a big topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, within our program, we really, you know, we talk a lot about nutrition and fitness and learning healthy recreational activities. And with that said, you know, like this person that wrote in, our student, a large proportion of them come in on medication. I think that there's a place for medications, that if the intensity of what someone is experiencing is so much and they just need some support in dialing down the intensity so they can access some new coping skills, then there's really a place for the medication. I think where we get into trouble is when we sort of chase after the pills, believing that they're going to fix it all for us. And I just don't believe that that's the case, that we have to look at the whole person and the whole lifestyle to truly affect change, that it's not just a medication.
Yeah, I agree. We have another one that's another question coming in, and this one reads, my teen with special needs is leaving high school in June, and I don't know where he'll live or what kind of work he'll be able to get. Do you know what services are available to us as parents to help him transition to adulthood?
So they're just talking, so not necessarily needing treatment, but just how do you support your child in the transition from your home into more of an independent lifestyle?
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, I think personally what we often find is that young adults come into our program not ever having held a job or, you know, had to manage money, that some of those basics, you know, ideally, I would love to see, you know, happen earlier in the home, and that there's still some expectations within the house. I think, you know, really practicing interviewing skills for jobs and supporting them and having the confidence to step into the world and those basic skills. I think that's where they struggle.
Yeah, and I think this actually opens up, you know, another issue, which is, I mean, isn't that part of what high school is supposed to be doing? I mean, in other words, what is being done if we're getting more and more? And this just sounds like someone who, you know, they didn't mention any sort, you know, there's no drug and alcohol issue, there's no mental health issue. It's just the fact that they feel like their child is, you know, is now going to leave high school in June, and they just don't feel like they are, you know, set up at all, you know, to move forward. And, you know, and how much of this, I mean, what more can we do as parents? What more should they be doing as schools? You know, or what do we need to be doing from a government standpoint to provide more technical type of, you know, schooling? You know, what are some of the things that maybe we're not doing, or things that we can be doing that is going to help them across the board?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think about a lot of the families that we've worked with, you know, the parents are folks that have worked really hard and have earned what they have. And maybe they didn't start with very much financially, but they just had the entrepreneurship or the work ethic or the scenario where they sort of raised themselves up. And in turn, they gave a lot to their children. They wanted their children to have a better lifestyle. So, you know, there was less of that expectation around the work and earning things and contributing to the house. So mm-hmm. I think that plays a role, you know, and then they'll ask, you know, they'll be frustrated that their child doesn't have the same work ethic as they do. And of course not. They were raised in a different environment. Jeffrey Arnett is a doctor that he really has developed this new theory called emerging adulthood, where he proposes that the transition into adulthood is now long enough that it's actually a separate and distinct period of life, sort of life development. So where it used to be, you know, you would graduate high school and you'd immediately either go into college or you would get married or you'd get a job. You know, there was an expectation around launching more quickly. Whereas now I think we have almost all of the 20s where it's more about finding themselves, finding purpose, passion, But I think some of that's coming on parents' dime. Mm-hmm. So I think it's about setting up expectations as your child is moving into a young adulthood around what you are going to support and what you're not. And then realistically looking at what skills do they need in place.
Yeah, and I think also when you mentioned in regards to having the same work ethic, I think in many cases the jobs that were available out there or that were geared towards young people, I mean, that was, you know, there was jobs in fast food, or there were jobs in, you know, mowing lawns, or, you know, whatever. There were these jobs that mm-hmm. were available, and it was sort of expected. You know, it's, you know, you had a buddy that worked at a gas station and another buddy that worked at the, you know, as a busboy in the local coffee shop and so on. So in fact, I did all of them, you know,
right.
You know, but it was also because I was told that if you want certain things, here are the jobs that you can get that will help you to get that. If you want a better bicycle, or after a certain age, you want a motorcycle, or you want a car, or you want these things, you know, here are the jobs that are available to you to make some of the money. You may not have to make all of it to get those things, but at least to make some of it. And I don't feel like we're doing that now. I think it's more of, you know, trying to just get them to a point to go, okay, this is great, now go to college, or now do this. And then we're surprised when they don't know how to do these other things.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's just multiple layers that impact that.
Yeah.
And that's the world we live in. It's academic setting. You know, I think as a society, we need to sort of look at it in terms of how do we better support students launching. I think there's a statistic out there that 41%, you know, of young people that start college won't finish. And to me, that's a pretty high number.
That really is.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that we have, there are similar things. I know that in Los Angeles, 50% aren't going to graduate high school. So much less getting into a college and then not finishing it, they're not going to graduate high school. So yeah, I think you bring up a great point is that, you know, are we setting them up for success and also showing the value of completion? You know, if you complete this, this is going to help you to your next level of success. I think that can also be incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we have another question that's come in. And again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time to send these questions in. I know many people say what state or country that they're sending it in from. I know many of them say that they're teachers. I think we just had one that was, explained that they are a teacher. So again, thank you. I know that you work in the middle of the day, so many of them are subscribing on iTunes, sending in a question, and then listening later on to hear what the answer was to their question. So I want you to know we take it seriously, and we try to make sure we get all those questions asked. This one reads, our daughter is 17 and seems to be able to handle schoolwork fine. What I am more concerned about is her lack of social ability. She has very few friends she sees in person, yet refers to the people she communicates with online as her friends. Does your treatment team teach social thinking or some form of therapy that will help her interact with people face to face?
This is a great question, and I think this is one that's going to be impacting more and more young people, just in our age of technology. Mm-hmm. You know, that so much of interaction now happens, you know, via tech, on the computer, online, on the phone. We do teach social thinking, and it's a great resource for people to learn more about. Michelle Garcia Winners mm-hmm. is a great resource. And that's, I think this is what ties back into the research findings of that as we see students come into our program, and again, I think college campuses should be really focusing on this as well, or just communities in general, about how do we help create community, face-to-face community where people do feel seen and cared about, you know, and have face-to-face interaction. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I couldn't agree more. And unfortunately, many of the young people that we end up working with, we're picking them up from their home, and we're being told that they haven't left their home in 3 months, or something like that. That everything that they're doing is online, and the parents are having trouble getting them just to go out and see some of the same kids. We had a parent recently that said, "I don't understand. They haven't seen their best friend. I think they said in like 2 months, and they said this is the same person that just maybe a year ago they were inseparable. And now everything is focused online, everything that they're doing, that they're still in contact with that person, but it's only online." So I love the fact that in not only your program, but, many programs, like yours, you're focusing on the fact that we are social beings and that you are being taught social thinking and social interaction.
I think the other piece is helping them learn how to entertain themselves and have fun beyond technology. So doing some good old-fashioned board games or card games. We build in a lot of recreational trips and travel, just so students can practice getting out of their comfort zone and learn the basics of planning and budgeting and looking at the logistics of doing some of these things. And the belief that the more that they practice and they have the success in that and feel the reward, the more apt they are to do it moving forward. I think this is not just applicable to, adolescents and young adults too. I think sort of all of us, I get pretty glued to my phone and I have to be really mindful to unplug and to get out and take a walk and meet up with my friends.
we must have been mind melding because I was smiling as I was thinking the same thing, and I was thinking, wow, I have my moments as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's a great point. It's something that we're all dealing with, but getting out. In fact, there's probably a lot of parents out there that are thinking right now, oh, that's great. You're getting them to play cards or you're getting them to go out, into the wilderness and enjoy nature and stuff. The parents are probably sitting back thinking, how are you getting them to turn loose of their phone?
Right. I mean, frankly, I think that's a challenge for us too. Our program's evolved over the years. It used to be that students just didn't have cell phones or their personal laptops when they came into the program. And we really, struggled in this last year around saying, well, what we see is we can't just take things away. I mean, we see them engage well and connect, but they also have to learn how to manage it. Mm-hmm. So kind of back to the experiential education. So we're really, monitoring and having a lot of conversations around how is tech impacting them, to increase their own awareness and insight of how they want to manage it. When are they going to put it away so they get good sleep? Understanding what are the red flags of when they're relying too much on the tech because they're anxious to walk into a room and connect with a person. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really, education and raising insight. And it's challenging. I don't have a really easy answer.
Well, yeah, because, again, we're dealing with young adults. You don't have the leverage of a program that's maybe dealing with adolescents that just says, okay, we're now taking these away from this point to this point.
Right. We've had some times where, say, a student, has not been managing it well and is refusing to turn the phone in. Sometimes, families have just cut off service and said, look, this is getting in the way of you living a functioning, healthy life. And until you can get a job and pay for this iPhone, we're not going to enable this anymore. And sometimes that's the most effective.
Right, which steps right into what we were talking about before, which is, they're earning things. And, it's just like getting that job. Well, now you're earning it. And at least I'm of the belief that it's so much sweeter when it's something that that you've earned.
Yeah, and they'll really identify sort of the pride of having earned that. Like, it feels really good when they've gotten that first paycheck and they can pay for something. We hear that a lot. It's really rewarding.
It's a great step in the right direction. Well, we've got another question, and again, I want to thank everybody out there. And Mona, I got to tell you, we've probably gotten more questions, for you than we have in many shows. So I think that tells us that there is a lot of parents and a lot of professionals out there very interested in this topic. So this one reads, for the last 3 years, our son has bounced around between treatment programs both here in town and out of state. He has now turned 18 and says he's going to walk out of a program where he seems to have been doing well in. What, if anything, can we do? We just don't think he is ready to be on his own, and yet, when he is at home, he chooses to do nothing. So,
yep.
What would you advise them?
The students, they're flexing their 18-year-old muscles, and they do have the freedom of choice to walk away from that program unless they're a danger to themselves or others. This is where the family has to really decide and be really clear about their boundaries. You know, that are they willing to say, if you walk away from the program financially, we're not going to support you. We love you. We're there emotionally, but we're not going to financially support this choice, and you're not welcome back in our home. So hopefully they have some support to make sure that they're really on the same page and that they're really clear in what they will and won't support. And more often than not, when those boundaries are set, we see the next layer of work really happen, and the next layer of growth, where that young person really takes responsibility and steps into a more independent, responsible life.
Yeah, and if you could also share with the parents out there that this scares them to death to make that decision. And I think if you can also share that it may not necessarily work the way that you want the first time, because they've had so much practice at pushing your buttons. So share a little bit, and maybe a story of a family, to where if you remain diligent and you stick to your guns, there's a good chance that they're going to realize that you mean business, and that it may be just the thing that makes them now establish growth and move to the next level that they need to get to.
Yeah, I have a really poignant story that's really stuck with me for a long time. And it was a young woman. She'd done wilderness, therapeutic wilderness. She came to us, and she was like the perfect treatment student. I was her therapist, and she loved assignments, and she was engaging and insightful until she relapsed. Mm-hmm. And then she really went into her addict brain, and it was night and day. Suddenly, I was working with a person that was blaming and angry and, just wanted out. And her parents made that really hard decision of saying, look, we love you, but we cannot continue. We're not going to support this lifestyle, because she chose to walk away from the program. Mm-hmm. Heartbreaking and scary. Probably 6 months later, actually. So 6 months of this family sort of having let go and allowing their daughter to make choices and run her life. But 6 months later, she reached out and said, I don't want to live this lifestyle. I'm really ready for change. And the thing that really stuck with me, too, was she was able to articulate that it wasn't until her parents said that, we love you, but we're stepping back and letting you do it. She said, I couldn't do my own work until I could stop managing my parents' anxiety. Wow. And that just profoundly stuck with me that she needed to be let go, mm-hmm. And to be responsible for her life in order to make a change. And now she's a nurse. She's well respected in the community. She has children of her own, and a great story to share.
Yeah, I love that. And I know, and we've dealt with parents that have had some of the same concerns. They, I just can't do this. I can't not know. And it ties right into the description that you gave of someone that they know is doing illegal drugs, but they're over 18. They can't continue to let them live in their home and do this. So they make that decision, but it's tearing them up inside. And one of the things that we've done that has helped, they've hired us through our investigation company, and they've asked us just to spot check from time to time. Don't make contact with them yet. You know, they're an adult now, but from time to time, can you just check and see, you know, that they're doing okay? You know, we just want to know that. And I think that has relieved some of the anxiety, you know, for them to at least know that, you know, okay, we know that they're okay. They may not be ready yet to make the right decision, but at least we feel better. We can sleep at night. Mona, I just want to thank you so much. I can't believe that we're out of time already. But again, thank you so much. I really want to acknowledge you for everything that you're doing, that your program is doing, and that the industry is doing. You know, it is taking these lives and turning them around and helping them to move on and become this next generation that I think is going to do great things.
Absolutely. I think that lots of hope. And Alan, thank you for inviting me to join you.
Well, you're very welcome. And for everybody out there, please, I'd like all of you to continue to join us. And be sure that you put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when our guest will be Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. And they're going to discuss defending freedoms. We talk about defending religious freedom, parental rights, and other civil liberties. And they do all of this without charging for their services. It's pretty amazing. And please, if you get a chance, visit our archives of past shows at answersforthefamily.com. If those of you would like to get a hold of Mona, we will have all of her information. We'll have it on the site. So if you're out there driving, you know, you'll be able to get all of her information on our site, answersforthefamily.com. If you're at your computer, go to dragonflytransitions.com, and you can contact Mona if you feel like your child is in a situation that they can provide some assistance. If you do go to the site, subscribe to our show or go to iTunes and subscribe to the show. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us. It also helps the people that are checking to see that it's something that may benefit them. And the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. Share some of the posts. We're starting to do Facebook Live when we have in-studio guests. So share those out to other people. So again, for everybody, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.